This is Ron Real Entrepreneurship, the show that brings the no-nonsense truth of what is required to start, grow, and scale your business. I am your host, Susan Sly. Hey, what is up, Raw and Real entrepreneurs, wherever you are in the world? I hope you're having an amazing, amazing day. And, you know, there's this whole interesting dichotomy happening right now, in my opinion, with the news, right? So you go on CNN and they're talking, and CNBC, and they're talking about how there's not enough companies going public, but then they're also talking about a recession. And then they're talking about entrepreneurial failure rates. And it's, if you focus on that, there's a saying, what you focus on, you find. You're never going to do anything. You're going to have entrepreneurial paralysis. And that's why I'm so excited about my guest today, because she definitely doesn't have that. She's been featured in Forbes, New York Times, Good Morning New York, amongst others. And her venture, which is called Cobble, which is so freaking cool, helps you make better decisions. It might not help us with our mutual passion for acquisition of books. That's a whole other story. But she's raised 3.3 million plus in seed funding. The app has had tens of thousands of swipes and growing. But one of the most fun things is she's already achieved something on my bucket list, which is to ring the bell at the New York Stock Exchange. So my guest today is the founder of Cobble, the amazing, the one and only, the mom of a 7-month-old, Jordan Scott. Jordan, thank you for being here.
Oh my, Susan, I have chills. That was so beautiful and so flattering. Thank you so much. I'm so excited to talk to you for a million reasons, but the fact that you have 4 kids, which I can't even imagine it while running a business, that is the dream. And I think, you know, we'll see. We're taking one kid at a time, but that's amazing.
Well, we'll talk about entrepreneurship, but the thing I will tell you is that one of the things my husband and I are super grateful for is we decided to space the kids out. And I think it was because, Jordan, he's the CPA. We looked at, you know, we looked at it not just from a love point of view, and we want to be available. I wanted to get to know the kids as individuals. And I kind of felt like if we had them all close together, they'd just be like a pack and they'd overwhelm us, right? So we decided to spread the kids out 3+ years each. And then we also looked at, did we want to have 3 kids in college at the same time financially? And the answer was, heck no. And so even car insurance for our 17-year-old, that's a whole other story. But it's been amazing because knowing them as individuals, and they all have their own individual personalities, but also from the fact that it allowed my body as a woman to heal, because it takes 32 yeah. months for your hormones to bounce back after having a baby.
Oh my, well, that certainly makes me feel better as I sit over here 7 months later, like, why am I not feeling 100% normal again? Well, okay. 32 months. Sounds good. Wow. That's incredible. I haven't.
And you're building a company, the 7-month-old, like seriously.
Yeah. And we're, you know, this is the year that we raise our Series A. And so that's a big endeavor as well. I know you mentioned what you guys are going through with your fundraising, situation, but yeah, it's definitely something that requires a lot of time and energy and focus. And I often have been thinking about, like, I think a big fear that women have, women founders, women entrepreneurs, is if I have a baby, like my whole brain is going to change and I'm not even going to be interested in my business anymore. And all I'm going to want to do is be with my baby and da, da, da. And I have just found, and it was certainly a fear of mine while I was pregnant. Everyone would tell me, like, you don't even know what's going to happen to you. And it was like this scary thing. I really feel like since I had her, I have been less stressed about the company. It sort of has like shifted my perspective and my priorities for sure. But I actually feel like the like anxiety that's lifted off my shoulders around the business, because I know that my daughter is the thing that actually really matters. Like you are not your company, but your child who is relying on you, that is worthy of like a ton of time and energy. It's actually made me a better leader, is long story short. Like, because there's less anxiety and less pressure, like I feel like I can show up for my team in a stronger, a little bit more even keeled way. And it's more fun again. And like, I don't know. I just think that becoming a mom actually has made me better at running this business. And it also is sort of just like, hopefully it's you also feel like more motivated to do well and be successful because now you have this little person that like gets to see that. And it's just different. It's different than doing it for yourself.
What I'm hearing from you, I love that, is that it's being a mom has given you different perspective and a different level of efficiency, right? Because yeah, and I get it. As someone, I've grown businesses, you know, literally with this raw and real entrepreneurship. When I was nursing, I remember I was doing a seminar, Jordan, and I started, I don't care. This is like you could be a guy, you could be 80 listening to this, like this is raw and real entrepreneurship. So I'm doing this seminar for like 300 entrepreneurs. And I start leaking in my tongue.
Oh, God. No.
And I'm just there and I'm like, you know, okay. I was nursing at the time. And so I very gracefully, I was like, you know, one of the other trainers, his name was David. I'm like, and what I'd love for you all to think about now is what is your vision for this time next year? I put them in a writing exercise. I'm like, David, come here. I'm like, I got to go. Or nursed the baby, came back, and then brought them out of the exercise. It was so funny, but you know, you just become
adaptable. That was perfect. That was perfect. So chic. I thought you were going to be like, David, give me your jacket now. I totally hear you. I nursed for 6 months, which I was thrilled with. I was like, great. That's as far as I can go. But you know, that is actually like one of the more challenging parts of running a business because you are like tied to this clock of like a person or a pumping machine or whatever it might be. And, you know, luckily it's actually because we're all remote now, like, and our team is spread out all over the world. You have that, you know, ability to pump or to nurse or whatever while you're working. And it also sort of like forced breaks that you just didn't give yourself before. You had to sit there and, you know, stare at a wall or have a conversation with someone or your husband with whoever. And so in that way, I sort of appreciated nursing as well.
What was I'm so curious, Jordan, like what was the hardest part for you during that time, you know, is it, you know, even just before you had your daughter building the company and then suddenly have this newborn, what was the hardest thing that you had to endure?
Yeah. I mean, several, right? Like I took a 3-week maternity leave.
Did you really like totally unplug?
I was like peeking at my Slack the day I gave birth, but I did not do any work. I did not join a single call. I really, really tried to take those 3 weeks. But I'm glad that I was the first in my company to have a baby. Our CFO had a baby actually a couple months before, but she's still like our sort of fractional CFO. She has a full-time job. They gave her 6 months of maternity leave. So she was all good on her side. And of course, Cobble was like, take whatever time you need. But it was important for me to like really go through that to know what a woman needs as, you know, the company continues to grow and we hire more women who are becoming mothers, whatever. Because now it's like, you just have this perspective that you just couldn't possibly have otherwise, whether you're a woman who's deciding they want to wait to have kids or not have kids, or you're a man who just like being a dad, it's just different. So I'm grateful that I saw what that looked like and sort of like what I think would have been better for me, what would have been worse, how when I went back, I sort of went halfway back and then I slowly added up. Like I thought that was really great. But 3 weeks is not long enough for maternity leave. I recognize that and would never ask anyone else to take that little time. But I think the hardest thing was, people tell you this, and I'm sorry that this is becoming a like mommy episode and not, you know, we'll get into Cobble, but
it's raw and real entrepreneurship. We've exactly. Already talked about my leaking top. So, you know, people can listen. I'm just going to have a little disclaimer because at this stage of the game at 50, I'm like, you know what, if this episode is uncomfortable for you, because we're talking about real entrepreneurship, then you know what, go listen to another one or go listen to one of those shows where it's like, oh, it was so easy. And I made all this money, like go listen to that show because this is raw and real. So like, please, no. Yes.
And I love that.
So I just want to disclaim that was my PSA.
I really enjoy that. I hope we have the true followers that are still listening right now. But yeah, you know, I was told, you know, a little bit about the hormonal shifts that happen and how, you know, you build up these hormones for 10 months and then they drop out of your body. So of course, this is how postpartum happens. This is how, you know, you start feeling sad and down. And in the first few days, which somebody told me like day three, that's when everything like really explodes. And I didn't have that. I was like, oh, it's day three. And I'm still like kind of high on like the craziness of what this experience was. And I was excited and that all felt great. For me personally, my hormones or my milk production or all kinds of things that all dropped out at 3 months. And that is when I started feeling like really, really down, really dark. And when you have those feelings, I think something that I certainly didn't realize is that you don't just feel like down for no reason, or like, you know, you don't want to like take care of the baby or things like that, but your brain is able to apply like why you feel not good. So to me, that was, oh, my business is not working out. Nobody's happy working here, blah, blah, blah. All these things that you have maybe like light little fears of, when you add in that hormonal drop, it's just like on fire times 100. And luckily for me, that really only lasted for like a strong week, but that was rough. And it wasn't until I sort of came out of that, that I was like, oh, I think that was just purely chemical, that was just hormones leaving my body. And my, you know, it's really hard to tell yourself that in the moment, whether it's postpartum or it's depression without a baby or whatever it might be. Like, it's so important to remind yourself that it's not you, it's chemical. It's an imbalance, and you know, you'll hopefully come out on the other side. So anyways, just wanted to share. It's like, it's not always this crazy months long postpartum, and it's not always obviously rainbows and roses. Like, it can be this in between thing that you just sort of have to take as it comes.
I love that we're having this conversation, because there, you know, I listen to podcasts every single day. I listen to friend shows. I listen to entrepreneurial podcasts. And there's a lot of conversation about how did you find the right VC, or how did you, you know, find your first customer? Like, let's having that discussion. The raw and real aspect is like, how do you get through the day when you're exhausted, you know, man, woman, when you're feeling, men have hormonal issues too. It's real. Andropause is real. So how do you get through the day? So when you were going through that, how did you get through the day? Because you would have had meetings, you have staff that rely on you. Like, how did you get through?
Yeah. I mean, I think that for me during that time, it was very much just like, get to your computer and like join the meeting and try to be as present as possible. And then otherwise it was like, just survive. Like, that's it. I think I, something that I try to do, whether it was like that really tough week or just anytime you're feeling ups and downs throughout the day, throughout the week, whatever, is I just, if I have this overwhelming to-do list, I try to pick the thing that's really bothering me. And you know, the thing that's really bothering you, maybe it's like a piece of work you have to do, or it's a conversation you don't feel like having with someone, or whatever it might be. You just have to start it. So if it's a big, you know, you have to edit a whole podcast, for example, it's like, I would take my phone and set a timer for 20 minutes. And I would just, even if it was like staring at my screen, looking at the problem and like moving something around for 20 minutes, I did my 20 minutes. I chipped a little bit away at it. Or maybe it's like setting up the meeting with that person. It's like, you took steps toward making it better. And what would often happen is you go beyond that 20 minutes, you actually finish it, or you make a really good dent in it, or whatever. I was recently listening to something with Jerry Seinfeld, and he very accurately said, you know, there's only two things that take away stress and anxiety. And that is A, working, doing the work that is of the thing that is giving you stress and anxiety, and B, exercise. And that's it. And I was like, wow, I think he's right. I pretty much always feel better after doing one of those two things.
Yeah. And it's that productivity piece. It's like, what stresses us out so much is thinking about taking the action. as opposed to taking the action. Yeah. And setting the timer, that is so key. And there was, even this morning, we have all of these projects. So as Jordan and I are recording the show at Radius, we're getting ready for the National Retail Federation big show. There are 30,000 people that come to that show, and we have a booth, and we were picked from hundreds of different startups to be in the Lenovo Innovation Zone, Lenovo and NVIDIA. And so there's a lot that goes into it. We're doing live artificial intelligence through computer vision. Most people just play a video. We're actually going to do it, which is insane. Wow. And fun. And so there's, you know, people are like, we're packing servers with cameras. We're doing all of this stuff. And in the middle of it, we're also doing a branding refresh. We have new video content. There's all these things. And so it was the same thing this morning. Jordan and I was like, okay, I got up, I prayed, I meditated, had my black coffee. I sent my husband and kids all gratitude notes. Aww. Then every morning I do that. And when they were little, I used to handwrite them on post-its before they got phones. And so then, and some days it's harder to send one to my husband. I'm just going to be candid. You know, we've been together 23 years and known each other for like 37, right? So I'm like, anyway, so did all that. And then I went to the gym. And then I took my daughter, I returned Slacks and emails, took my daughter to school, the youngest one. And then I came back, and this thing, I was like, oh, I don't really want to do it. But I had done all that other stuff, set my timer, and I just sat down and I did it. And, mm-hmm. and to that point, that is, are you showing up as a founder, right? Do you have your founder hat on? Because an employee will call in sick, but the founder doesn't. And so speaking of that, let me ask you this question. So how did the idea for Cobble come about?
Okay, amazing. So basically, I, like so many of us in relationships, I was just really tired of going back and forth around what we were eating for dinner. I just felt like this conversation happened every single night of like, what do you want to do? I don't know. What do you want to do? And we either ended up doing what we always do, cooking the same thing or like going to the same places, or somehow we would spend so much time discussing it that like we wouldn't even do anything at all. And so I was really curious about what was out there for decision-making and like aiding people in making decisions together. And I come from a journalism background, so I am obsessed with great content and great ideas. And I just wanted to combine great content with decisioning tools. And of course, our biggest sort of hypothesis is that people don't make decisions completely by themselves. If you're in a relationship or you're going out with friends, or we're social people, we don't make decisions in a vacuum. We make decisions with other people. So what does a platform look like that connects you with your closest relationships, puts great content in front of you, and actually helps you follow through on that content and go do the thing? And that's all rooted in collaboratively agreeing. And so that's what we built with Cobble. It was initially focused on couples because, again, it was me and my husband, then boyfriend, now husband. And we were sort of interested in like being super targeted at couples, and feeling like there wasn't a ton of stuff out there post dating app. Of course, you know, it was always how to find someone. It wasn't like how to like nurture a relationship. So with that being our launch, we had a pretty strong launch. There was a lot of interest. We raised our seed round right around that time. Of course, it was the middle of the pandemic. I think we sort of represented a reemergence from the pandemic. People were like, oh, one day we'll go out again and like we'll be with our people. And so it was sort of a good time to raise, at least for us. And then we quickly realized that our users who were connecting with their significant others were like, great, but you know, I go to dinner with my friends, or like I go see a movie with my mom, or you know, they wanted to connect with their other relationships. And that's when we expanded to friends and groups. And that's where we are today.
So my burning question for you, and I love it because so many people, they have an idea and they're like, oh, you know, I'd love to take this idea and do something. But where they get hung up is they aren't coders. You went to J school. So unless you're coding Python in your spare time, I don't know. You're amazing. Possibly. No. But how did you create the beta version?
Great question. So you are correct. I am not technical, only obsessed with technology. I was able to raise a friends and family round to basically hire an agency to develop the MVP, which was, you know, very basic. We found a great partner called Y Media Labs that built the first version of the product. And from there, I actually found people, you know, I was in a little WeWork. I just had my desk. And one time this guy was walking around the office and was like, does anybody need a software engineer, front end coder? And I was like, I think I do. Like, I don't even know what I need on my team, but I just had this agency build the first version of the app. Now I have this code. And like, obviously we need to start iterating and we need to start doing stuff. So he was like, well, let me take a look at the code. And he looked at it and we both sort of fell in love with the product all over again together. And he had such great ideas. And that was our first hire, Josh, who's still with us. Nice. And what was really cool was that he then brought on his co-founder and CTO of his past startup, who then joined our team as our lead backend engineer. And the team has just grown from there. But I think it's really important to, you know, if you can't raise that friends and family round, or, you know, you can't afford an agency, which of course, like, I was incredibly lucky to be able to do that. You know, you have to do the Josh route, right? Like, you have to find someone that's in your world that is like excited about what it is you're doing and, you know, might be willing to take sweat equity or whatever it might be, to get the product built. But yeah, that was how we started.
That's awesome. And I love that. I can think of, I have two really close friends and I've said, listen, when you get your act together, they have an amazing concept. I will be an investor in your company. I'll come in the seed round. And that's where, and I know they're listening right now. You know who you are, girls. I love you so much. That's where, you know, they're like, but who's going to build the MVP? And I'm like, there are groups out there. So you heard it from Jordan. So let's talk about raising money, Jordan. Yeah. Some people, it's easy. Some people, they're so intimidated. How did you raise that first money? Did you have like a beautiful pitch deck or an idea on a napkin? What was it?
I mean, we had a couple things going for us that I think helped us raise our seed round, which is that we had an audience grown already. We had an Instagram and we had a newsletter from a prior brand I had started called IDK Tonight. And that was purely content. That was purely like, go to dinner here and then get a cocktail after. And we called them date nights and we just shared them. There was no paying for it. It was just purely to grow an audience. And we grew that audience to about 50,000 people. And I think that showed investors that A, we know how to make great content, and B, we know how to put that content in front of people and have them enjoy it. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we came armed with that as it is. But then as I think the real reason we were able to raise is they can really sense passion for an idea. And we were not selling a little niche idea that is going to change, you know, 1% of one group's, you know, problems in the world. It was like, we want to change how people make decisions together. This is crazy and humongous. And it's not just about dinner, by the way. You know, we were pitching like, when you need to pick a mattress with your significant other, like right now, Casper can target you all day long on Facebook. But at the end of the day, you have to turn to your partner and be like, do we want this mattress? So why not create a product that actually reaches both halves of the decision maker in one place? And, you know, we were really pitching big, 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 big. And it was like, this is going to either fail spectacularly or it's going to like work out and you were part of it. So that was really, I think, what gave us the ability to raise the money is like how big of an idea it was, how passionate I was about it, and the team that we had sort of created at that point.
And you have a relatable problem statement, right? Like when you think about like your model in B2C and it's like, oh yes. Have you ever had a challenge making a decision with your partner, with your friends? Yeah. Like
right.
How many times has that happened in the last 7 days? Like five, right?
Yeah, right. Right.
So it's so relatable from that perspective. So how big is your team now?
We have 8 people full time, and we also have our team of curators, and we basically make sure that we have people with boots on the ground in each of the cities that we're launched in, which we're launched in New York, LA, Atlanta, Miami. Could be out by the time this podcast is released. I'm not sure, but it's coming very soon. And it's really important to us that the content is super high quality. And that's why we have people there. But yes, the entire team, if I'm going to talk about it in Slack terms, is we have about 25 people.
Amazing. And so now you and I, before we went into the show, we're talking about doing an A round. Yeah. And for people who don't know what that is, that's when you do your major first investment round. So when we're talking about, if you're just new to the show, it's like your seed round, those are your friends, your family. Many people have heard me talk about the journey with Radius, because like we started with friends and family round, and then we did multiple rounds. We just did our safe to share conversion round, and we've not done our Series A because we're at revenue and we haven't needed to.
Yeah.
Series A is a whole different thing. So I'm going to give some stats, and then we're going to get Ron real for this part of the show. So the statistic is less than 2.5% of women-led pitches to VCs in A rounds or higher actually get funded.
Mm.
And so when Jordan and I are going to pitch, that means, and that data is actually moving in a more favorable direction, but it isn't double digits yet. So when Jordan and I go to pitch, we know that there's a 97.5% chance, just because of our gender, that we won't get funded. So that doesn't scare me. It actually excites me, because it's like anything that's forcing me to be better is like super fires me up. So let me ask you, Jordan, how are you approaching this A round? Have you started to talk to VCs? Do you have a specific criteria for VCs? I'm just so curious.
I mean, we're doing probably similar to what you guys are doing. We're very focused on VCs that have openly said that they're looking to invest in minorities and in women-led companies. Obviously, you look and see the prior investments they've made and if your company would be a good fit for them, and their past investments are pretty, you know. Luckily, we have a subscription to PitchBook, which I highly recommend. You know, you got all of the information there, all of the contact information for folks and stuff like that. So the way that we're handling it is really organizing in Notion, which is another big passion of mine. That's what we use for our sprints, our product sprints, and pretty much everything. But we've organized probably 500 VCs into different tiers, tier 3, tier 2, tier 1, dream leads. And basically the way we're going after it is reaching out to the leads first. Some people have different recommendations here. They say you should start with VCs that you're less interested in, so you can practice the pitch and you can get the kinks out. And, you know, I think that there's a little bit of room for that. But in my, experience with speaking to other investors, I think it is smart to get your lead on as early as possible, because the rest sort of fall in place after that. If you can say that you have one of these big names who have already done the due diligence on your company, they're in, they will be, you know, leading the round, the other VCs will really follow suit. And I've heard that that makes everything go along a little bit faster. The other thing I've been told, and luckily we're in this position as well, is really having 6 to 12 months of runway, so that you're very comfortable, you are in a little bit of a bigger position of power, because you aren't so desperate for capital. And so that's sort of where we're at. You know, we have runway through the end of the year. We're starting conversations this month. We luckily were approached by several VCs once we announced our seed round back at the end of 2020, and have just kept up to date with them and have updated them with the progress of the company and sort of where we've been. So it feels a little bit more natural to finally have those Series A conversations at this point. So if you did just raise your pre-seed, your seed round, whatever, it's always a good idea to be in contact with different VCs that you could see yourself potentially raising from in the future, just to continue building that relationship.
Absolutely. And I it's so well said. And I was taking down some notes because I love how you're approaching the VC piece almost like a product sprint, like what is on that roadmap. And the one of the things I've done, same thing, like doing the due diligence, who have they invested in? So I'm speed dating them. And so you probably are too. So what I said to my assistant is that they get 15 minutes. And so 15 minutes, we have a conversation. And if I would want to have dinner with you or lunch with you or a cocktail with you, then you're moving over on our list. So when I go to New York, one of the leads from a firm, a fairly big firm, reached out to me and we were like having the best conversation. I won't say her name. And then it's like, we're meeting for cocktails in New York. It's like, yes, let's go for cocktails. And because the VC is going to come into your team.
Yes.
And if you don't feel comfortable with that person, then no amount of money is worth selling your soul.
Yeah, you're totally right. And Susan, you've nailed it. It's like, and I think that we are moving more in this direction too, but this is a partnership. This is, you know, an opportunity that you are bringing to them to be extremely successful and make their, you know, investors happy as well. And so I think it is important to realize, you know, if you feel like you have a compelling opportunity, and certainly you should feel that way if you're looking to raise money, because otherwise you should get back to the drawing board and continue to figure out how you don't need to raise money, because raising money is not fun. But you know, if you feel like you have a really compelling opportunity, you'll be interesting to a lot of VCs, and you should have the option to select who can add value to your team and to your vision. You know, I think what's helpful for me to think about is like, I want to find people who are just as passionate about solving decision-making as I am, and who have ideas to bring to me, and who have advisors that they would recommend, and who have, you know, really important roles that they think they could help fill for us. And, you know, it's like, what other value do they bring? Money is money. And there's plenty of it out there. I know that's sort of like not always the cool thing to say, but like it is out there and it needs to be deployed. So there's not a scarcity of capital, and it's just about, you know, finding the right partner.
Yeah, that is so well said, Jordan. Like that, it's, I love how you're articulating that. And interviewing hundreds of founders, being around founders, there's this certain je ne sais quoi about a founder. Like when you just know that you know that you know, like that person who said, yeah, I'm having postpartum, but I'm still showing up. Like, or, you know, I have an abundant mentality. I know exactly what I need to do. Most people, you know, like my daughter, Avery, she started in J school, then she switched to marketing. She started at BU, and then she was like, I'm cold. And she transferred to ASU. But anyway, and now she's, you know, she's doing all of this marketing stuff, and some of her clients are tech companies, but it's like, to look at things so meticulously and not become so attached and to wear that founder's hat. That's the person that, you know, you bet on. And I know you're going to do amazing things. Okay. Final question. Okay. Everyone listening, thousands of people around the world, some are in your current markets. Why download Cobble? Like why? You're not in Phoenix yet, but I traveled. I'm going to Miami. So I'll be in New York, as you know, so.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I think that if you are feeling like you have these lists everywhere of places you want to go and shows you want to watch and things you want to do, and you don't feel like you're actually following through on them, you know, our goal at Cobble is to get you out into the world and put the right stuff in front of you and your people at the right time. And so if that is something that sounds compelling to you and you want to just live more life with the people you care about, you know, join us on this journey. You know, that's what we're all about.
So check it out. It's trycobble.com. Okay. And if you're really cerebral, there are, if you really want to, I should, team, note to the team listening. So there are studies on decision fatigue that came out of University of Florida. And when I was looking at Cobble, I was like, oh my gosh. So I did a lot of writing and researching on decision fatigue back in the day when I wrote Organize Your Life back in, I don't know, 2015. And people do get decision fatigue, and it's kicks in if you're not working shifts. It kicks in between 2 and 4 in the afternoon when your cortisol levels start to go down. So I'm not a Cobble spokesperson, but I will tell you, if you need more validation of why you need the app, go read those studies and it'll make perfect sense.
Oh my God. I appreciate that so much. It's so true. We're all exhausted, founders and everyone.
Well, Jordan, thank you so much for being here and sharing your wisdom. And I would just encourage everyone, if you have, this show has blessed you, and you like, especially if you know another mom or a dad who's got young children and they're thinking of starting a company or they have a company, share this episode. Jordan and I would love a 5-star review. If I read your review on air, I will give you a $50 Amazon gift card. So check that out. Wow. Tag us when you share. We would love that. And if you really were touched, just go ahead to studentslie.com, send an email. I will read your emails. And so Jordan, I wish you the best of luck. I am so excited. I want to see you either ringing the bell for the second time, or like, you know, your company is the one that comes across PitchBook. It's like the next unicorn. So I send you so much love and just like excitement, cheering you on, sister.
Thank you so much, Susan. I feel like I learned so much from you in this episode. I'm going to start by writing gratitude notes to my people tomorrow.
You got
it. We'll make it a feature in Cobble right before you go out together. You have to send someone a nice message.
Yeah. And if they don't send one back, then you're not going out.
Yeah. Then the plan is canceled.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, you got it. Well, thanks so much, Jordan, for being here. And everyone, this has been another episode of Raw and Real Entrepreneurship. And thank you so much for listening. You guys are why I do what I do. And I'd love to hear from you. So with that, God bless. Go rock your day. And I will see you in the next episode.
Hey, this is Susan. And thanks so much for listening to this episode on Raw and Real Entrepreneurship. If this episode or any episode has been helpful to you, you've gotten at least one solid tip from myself or my guests, I would love it if you would leave a 5-star review wherever you listen to podcasts. After you leave your review, go ahead and email reviews@susanslie.com. Let us know where you left the review. And if I read your review on air, you could get a $50 Amazon gift card, and we would so appreciate it, because reviews do help boost the show and get this message all over the world. If you're interested in any of the resources we discussed on the show, go to susanslie.com. That's where all the show notes live. And with that, go out there, rock your day, God bless, and I will see you in the next episode.
Are you currently an employee looking to start your own business? Maybe you've been thinking about it for a while and you're just not sure where to start. Well, my course, Employee to Entrepreneur, combines my decades of experience as an entrepreneur with proven methods, techniques, and skills to help you take that leap and start your own business. This course is self-paced, learn on demand, and comes with an incredible workbook. And that will allow you to go through this content piece by piece by piece, absorb it, take action, and then go on to the next module. So check out my course on susanslie.com, Employee to Entrepreneur.